Okay, so let me start this informal discussion then. First, Matthew Fisher has suggested to discuss on this issue, and I decided to organize an informal discussion time. And Matthew is not here yet, but I'm sure he's coming. And then I'm going to talk first, and then Fakir Asad will be talking next, and you are going to talk in the third. Okay. Okay. So this is a basically very open issue, and still not completely solved. So it's open to the audience, so you can discuss at any time and may comment on or discussions. What questions? Now, let me first start from the background about the commensurate insulators. And if you see here, the as a function of RS, RS is the mean electron distance measured scaled by the Bohr radius, and if RS becomes larger and larger, it becomes more classical, and the effect of zero-point oscillation becomes smaller. And in a continuum limit, in two-dimensional system, it is fixed that it undergoes a phase transition from liquid phase to the Wigner solid at around 35 of RS. And now we are interested in the commensurability effect. So we put some lattice, discrete lattice, in this system, and then see what happens, how the stability of solid phase changes.
So you're starting out basically suggesting if I can then apply a small external potential to it.
Not small external potential. We just put the system on the lattice. So it's a kind of a Hubbard type model, but with long range Coulomb interaction. And then it turned out that by taking just as a filling 1 over L in terms of that lattice periodicity, if that periodicity, the filling is just a simple fraction of the complete full filling, then it shows a very stable, very much enhanced solid phase. And that that is shown here. Here I have shown, I'm showing that how the solid phase is stabilized with the decreasing number of L here. And if this is 1 over 2, that means quarter filling case, then what we see is that the stability, the solid phase is as stable as up to RS around in the order of 1. And this is the plot of the Hartree-Fock result. So Hartree-Fock completely fails in reproducing the basic transition point in the continuum limit, but in the case of very simple fraction of very simple fraction for the filling, it is relatively better, but still the factor 2 or 3 different. And now, so this is a basic phase diagram. So if you have some simple fractions, the solid phase is dramatically stabilized, and that is a reason why we have some kind of commensurate insulator which can be doped by the carriers and which becomes metal or liquid phase. So, oh, sorry. So, basic picture is if you don't have any Coulomb interactions, you just have a simple band insulator as a function of filling for zero filling or filling two, complete filling of the band. And then in other region, you just have a simple metal if you don't have electron-electron Coulomb interaction, but if you have periodicity. But now the real picture with a Coulomb interaction is something like this. If you increase the effect, the effect of Coulomb interaction measured by m star over epsilon, m star is the effective mass and epsilon is the effective dielectric constant, then if you come up to this region where the the interaction effect is modest, then you will see some stability of charge ordering or a mode insulating state at some simple fractions. But if you increase this ratio further, then you will see a much more complicated structure, and that will make some Debye staircase type structure. So if you compare 35 and 2 or 1 here, then the stability of the solid phase is dramatically enhanced. And this is RS, so in terms of density, it can be as large as 1,000 or something. And in the realistic solid systems like transition metal oxide or organics, the system is sometimes somewhere around here, and that means some type of simple fractional filling should stabilize the solid phase, but in other fillings it should be metal.
Sorry, on that picture, how do you define M star and epsilon?
M star is the effective electron mass, and in this lattice model, it can have a correspondence by taking the dispersion in the bottom of the band, because we are now working in some small filling system. And you can make some.
When you make this plot here, M star is just a constant for your model, is that correct? Or?
Here, the epsilon over M star is constant along this curve. And so the filling and Coulomb interaction is an independent parameter, and so the Coulomb interaction determines this ratio by changing epsilon. So let me discuss what's going on in these particular filling, and those are. In broad sense, we can call those mode insulators. Of course, originally, the mode insulator is defined at this integer filling. But we can say that these charge order states are also mode insulating state in a broad sense, because they are also incompressible states, and it has some similarity. Now,
question.
Yeah.
This is in three dimensions?
Well, this particular calculation was done in two dimensions.
Yeah. Next question, what is the symmetry of the lattice potential? Do you take some square lattice or something?
You mean the lattice potential? Lattice potential is a kind of isocele type potential to stabilize a triangular lattice structure.
Okay, triangular, yes.
That's the details of the issue. So in that sense, solid phase is most stabilized in this calculation. So if you have some frustrated lattice structure, of course, the solid phase should shrink somehow.
Yeah.
So can you say a little bit about how you got these results?
I'm going to tell you about the methodology next. Before that, let me mention about experimental indication on the spin legged in those mode insulating state or commensurate insulator. Now, this is some partial list. I don't have a complete list here. There are many attempts to realize this type of compounds with geometrical frustration effect to realize spin-legged type phase. And these are the cases where the local spin moment is larger than half. But the most interesting case is the case which has a spin half, which has the largest quantum fluctuations. And these are two-dimensional system, and those are the three-dimensional system. In two-dimension, we can have a triangular lattice or J1, J2 type next nearest neighbor transfer exchange model in Heisenberg terminology on the square lattice or Kagome type lattice. And in three-dimensional system, we have spinel or FCC or pyroclore type systems. And I'm going to, well, I don't have enough time to talk all of them. And I'd like to concentrate on these two systems. And here, we have some interesting progress recently. For example, in the case of iridium compound, which has some kind of pyrochlore type structure. But anyway, let me move on to the two examples of these two systems, because these two systems show the most detailed studies done. So before coming to concentrating on these compounds, basically what I'd like to say here in this slide is that in two-dimensional system, it appears to show some kind of gapless liquid phase in experiments. And I'm going to tell you about this ET compound later. So let me see here. In this case, the susceptibility seems to show rather broad peak, and down to the lowest temperature, it doesn't show any kind of phase transitions. Now, if you see the case of three-dimensional systems, here, this is also a two-dimensional system called bulbocyte. It's known for a long time. It's known from 18th century. And this is a copper vanadium, copper vanadate. Also include water or something. In any case, it seemed to be in the class of some modified Kagome type lattice, and it doesn't show any signature of magnetic transition if you measure the night shift or 1 over T1 in NMR resonance. So those are the case in two-dimensional system, but in three-dimensional system, it appeared to show in as a general trend. Of course, there are many exceptions, but as a general trend, it seemed to show some spinless type behavior, freezing of the spins. And it's curious because, for example, in the case of yttrium-2-molybdenum-207, this is a stoichiometric compound, and it's supposed to have basically no randomness and disorder. But still, it seemed to show some spinless type behavior, and the field cool and the zero field cool response seemed to show different behavior. So I don't know whether it is categorized to the conventional spinless or not, but it clearly shows some freezing of the spin degrees of freedom. Now let me, yes?
Just a question about the lithium vanadate system. I'm not sure I understand what you call it spin liquid, because I think there are some other peer evidence that there's a 3D magnetic ordering at about
the very, this temperature. So down to this temperature, it seemed to show some kind of order. So in that sense, this is not a very good example. So that is the reason why I'm not going to talk in detail on that compound. So let me concentrate on the case of kappa ET type organic compounds. This is a rather complicated structure with this molecule, ET molecules, is stuck like this. And then there is a dimerization of ET molecules in pair like this, circled by orange color. And it is stuck with the anion X. It can be changed, and that can control the basic parameters. And because of this dimerization, the dimerization is rather strong in the case of copper-type compounds. Then, originally, it should have a multiband structure, but because of that dimerization, eventually it is reduced to single band-type model by taking the antibonding orbital near the Fermi level. And that was done in the extended Hückel calculation, and it confirmed that this is basically described by the Hartfield system in the single band system. And then we have a square lattice type structure, but we have nearest neighbor hopping transfer here, but also we have next nearest neighbor transfer T prime, but we don't have a substantial amount of wave function overlap in this direction. So we have an isotropic triangular lattice in this system. So the lattice structure is basically like this. Now, so that extended Hückel calculation tells us that in the case of this compound with this anion coupled to NCN to bromine, then the ratio of T prime over T is estimated to be between 0.5 to 0.7. And this is a rather famous phase diagram taken from the Kanoda's paper that shows if you, under pressure, it can control the overlap of T prime with T, and that makes the transfer kinetic energy larger. So this can show the bandwidth control type metal insulator transition. And in the ambient pressure, many compounds is in the insulating region here. But then by applying the pressure, it can go to the metallic state or even the superconducting state. And in the typical examples of these anions, the antiferromagnetic order antiferromagnetic order takes place between 10 Kelvin to 40 Kelvin, I would say, around that. And then
this is the generic first order transition between.
Oh yeah, this is a first order transition, and recently there's a very interesting work on the critical termination point. And so this mod transition terminates at the finite temperature critical point, and there is a rather interesting argument about the universality class of this critical point, but this is not the subject of this informal discussion. So if you have any interest, I'm glad to discuss personally.
There's a pretty good chance Kanoda will come later in the workshop.
Mm-hmm. Is he coming?
Seems so.
Oh, great. Uh-huh. So then you can hear from him. Okay. So as I mentioned, the system is rather close to the metal insulator transition. And in the case of copper to CN3 for the anions, this is the most interesting case in the context of this informal discussion. Because in case of copper to CN3, the estimated T prime over T in the extended Hückel calculation shows nearly right triangular lattice structure. The estimate is around 1.05 or something, so very close to the right triangular lattice. And actually, this ratio for this anion system is the largest among all the ET family compounds. And the interaction energy is estimated to be around 8, scaled by the transfer. So we expect rather strong interaction effect as well as a strong frustration effect. So this shows the resistivity. So it is a mod insulating state at ambient pressure like this. With decreasing temperature, it shows a dramatic increase of the resistivity. But under pressure, with some relatively small pressure, it undergoes first order metal insulator transition to metal, and then eventually at very low temperatures, it goes to the superconducting state, around 3 to 4 Kelvin. So it shows that this is rather close to the first order metal insulator transition. And the question is, does it belong to the same category to the other compounds which I have shown in the last slide, which shows transition between the antiferromagnetic insulator to the superconductor or metal? So the measurement was done in the insulating side at ambient pressure, and this is the data for 1 over T1. I think, yeah, this is 1 over T1. And it doesn't show any signature of clear phase transition. So at the lowest temperature, is 0.03 Kelvin. So and I'd like to remind you that the basic exchange constant should be around 10 Kelvin or even more. So even at 3 orders of magnitude lower temperature, it doesn't show any signature of clear phase transitions. And another interesting feature is if you see, yeah, at the temperature of 0.3 Kelvin or so, the 1 over T1 shows not single exponential decay, but some complicated structure which has two time scale of the exponential decay. And this curve appears to show the scaling of 1 over T1 proportional to T squared. But in any case, this suggests that the spin excitation is gapless. There is no indication of exponential decay at around this temperature. So this is the case of organic compounds. And I'm going to tell you quite different system, which is helium-3 on graphite. And here is a cartoon of the structure where on the graphite, the first layer of the helium, either helium-4 or helium-3 or even hydrogen or deuterium can be adsorbed on graphite. And then on the second layer, the system can make a square root 7 times square root 7 commensurate structure. And this is a kind of one of the mod insulating state. And the earlier old experiment in 97 appeared to show, again, gapless feature in a specific heat. And the question is, what's going on in the mounted degrees of freedom? And of course, this is a quite different system as compared to the previous organic compounds. So in a sense that we have a hardcore repulsion. And so the relevant model should include some multi-spin exchange interaction and so on. And it should be different from the convention, the simple Hubbard type model. But anyway, the specific heat shows somehow gapless feature without showing a exponential type decrease of the specific heat. Now, the magnetic susceptibility has been measured very recently in ISSP, in our institute. And the ultra low temperature group has succeeded in reaching the temperature of 10 microkelvin, and they have measured how the magnetization behaves as a function of temperature. And still it shows some gapless type feature and some non-zero uniform susceptibility. This is taken in the case of, helium-4 on the first substrate, first layer. In this case, they have done experiments for the case of hydrogen deuterium molecule on the first layer. If you put the different atoms on the first layer, then the lattice constant changes, and then the parameter for the exchange constant rather largely changing. In any so if you fit the Curie-Weiss form, then it shows that the Curie-Weiss temperature is 9 millikelvin, but in this case, Curie-Weiss temperature is 0.9 millikelvin. This difference tells us that the exchange interaction is one order of magnitude different. So this case is better because the exchange constant is larger, and but still at 10 microkelvin, it indicates the signature of the non-zero magnetic susceptibility. And it doesn't show any type of magnetic order. So now those are the background of the experimental studies. So let me move on to the theoretical indications. And
a question about helium. Is there anything else you can measure dirty mechanization with a specific heat. I mean, it's a pretty complicated system.
It's a good question.
Portfolio. So what are you planning to do next?
Yeah, actually, I'm suggesting to measure compressibility. It's possible because gas pressure controls the chemical potential. Those are the basic thermodynamic quantities. And of course, the transport, for example, transport, it's rather hard to measure.
Can we do NMR or maybe
NMR? Yeah, the question is the... I mean, signature of this is just single layer system, so it's not a bulk system, so it's rather hard to detect the signature. So let me move on to the theoretical study. I'm not going to tell you that experimental results are successfully explained in theoretical studies. I'm going to tell you that the question is quite open. I mean, issue is open. The ground state is not fully understood yet. So I'm going to tell you some strange feature which has been obtained numerically. So before coming to the result, I think I need to tell you how the numerical result was obtained, because this is a notorious system of frustrated, and people know that there's a sign problem. And except exact diagonalization studies, people believe that there's no powerful method. Now, I'm going to convince you that there's one method which can handle relatively better than the exact diagonalization. And here I'm showing basic, very simple way of describing our method, and that is just to construct some kind of a variational wave function by using the linear combination of the some basis functions. And in the later part of my talk, I will take Slater determinant for the basis functions, but in more generic description of the formalism, you can take any kind of basis functions. But in this case, we take the Slater determinants, and then we ask the question to optimize the variational wave function by fixing L. And of course, if L is 1, in the case of Slater determinants, that the best optimized wave function is known to be as the Hartree-Fock solution. But then the question is, when we increase L, then we can include quantum fluctuations systematically. And then, is it possible to extrapolate to the full size of Hilbert space or not? So because of this construction of the wave function, we can calculate any kind of physical quantities on the basis of explicit representation of the wave function. And because we construct the wave function explicitly, we don't have any negative sign problem.
This is like configuration interaction.
Sorry?
Isn't this what the chemists do all the time?
Configuration interaction method? Yeah, I want to tell you that is a bit different, because in this case, the basis function can be non-orthogonal, in contrast to the case of configuration interaction. And here I'm showing how the basis function is obtained. And by applying e to the minus tau h in the path integral formalism, if you apply p is sufficiently large p, if the initial trial wave function is not orthogonal to the real ground state, then you can obtain the real ground state in principle. Now, this e to the minus tau h can be decomposed into the kinetic energy part and the interaction part in the Hubbert representation. And if tau is sufficiently small, this representation is a good approximation, and asymptotically correct. Now, in the Slater determinant representation, if you apply I to the minus tau hk kinetic energy term, then it just rotates the basis function to another. But if you apply the interaction energy, because this is not a bilinear form, so we need to introduce some tricks. So one way is to introduce Hubbert-Stratonovich transformations, and then you can transform the interacting term to the sum over bilinear terms. But then, because of this trade-off for the summation, you have some branching. And if you apply this many times, that makes an exponentially large number of basis functions. Okay, so then the our strategy is to take this operation many times and then ask which choice of the basis function gives the lower energy. And we repeat that process for sufficiently large p. So that means we are constructing some truncated Hilbert space, and in that Hilbert space we construct the lowest energy state. Additional refinement of this technique is to introduce quantum number projection, because in this procedure, if you take the Stratonic-Hilbert transformation, then then we truncate. So there is a possibility that this basis function is employed, but this can be discarded in that truncation process. And that explicitly breaks the original symmetry of the Hamiltonian. So to restore the original symmetry of the Hamiltonian, we can also apply quantum number projection to the state which has been obtained in the path integral renormalization group procedure. And this quantum number projection operator is, for example, in the case of spin projection, we can make an integration over a spin angle. And this is known as the Wigner's D function. The weight function is known as the Wigner's D function. And with this weight, we can specify the spin quantum number, and integrating over that Euler angle, we can pin down, we can fix the, we can restore the original symmetry of the in the spin space. Now, also in the case of momentum quantum number, we can just shift the original PRG wave function with an amount of j to in the real space, and then just take a linear combination of this with the weight function v to the minus ikr, then you can get the total momentum fixed wave function. So this shows how the systematic increase of the basis function reaches the basically the exact ground state. And if you take only the spin projection after the PRG transformation, then if for the singlet state, this is a case of rather small systems, so we have exact solutions here, diamonds. And here I'm plotting as a function of energy variance, but that is basically we are increasing the number of basis functions from this side to this. And if you increase the number of basis functions, then if the real true ground state is realized, then the energy variance should be zero. So as a function of energy variance, we can see how the state is converged to the real ground state. And now you see, for example, in the singlet state, we have a rather good convergence. But if you see the higher spin state, it doesn't show good convergence. And that is natural, because in the original path integral renormalization process, we are seeking for the ground state. So in that wave functions, the higher excited state is not contained anymore. So for the higher excited state, we need more trick. But in any case, for the ground state, it shows rather good convergence. This is a case of spin projection. And here we have also taken the projection with the momentum.
Question, why is it so that I would think, right, the basic constraint to be a particular total S channel, and then I would think that the thing should still be variational within the total S manifold, right? Mm-hmm. When you look for the lowest Eigenstate, for S2 or something, I would expect it would be still variational, but that's apparently not the case.
No, no, here, all of these states are variational.
Yeah.
And then the number of base function is increasing from 1 to then basically the largest number of base function we have taken is the order of hundreds.
Now, when you go to SS3, right, you extrapolate a line
yeah.
that undershoots the exact answer.
No, 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 but still this is higher than the ground state energy.
Oh, I see.
So it satisfies variational principle. But if you take some extrapolation, you have to be careful.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
What is the size of this?
This is actually, we have exact ground state energy, so this is a 4x4 system. So I'm going, 4x4. I'm going to tell you the larger system size.
Is it a Hubbard-like model?
This is a Hubbard model with a U over T4, and no frustration actually here. Now, as I mentioned, the high excited state becomes worse because the component of the high excited state is already gone in the first PRZ process. So the to overcome this difficulty, the way is to obtain the lowest energy state with a specified quantum number that can be called as the ERA state in the terminology of nuclear physics. Actually, Erast means the Swedish, or I don't. Some Swedish?
Yeah, it means actually the most dizzy.
Most dizzy, okay. Anyway, we apply the quantum number projection each time, every time, in the process of PRG of the e to the minus tau h. So that assures that you are always in the good quantum number sector, and then it guarantees that we are going to the lowest energy state with a fixed number of basis functions. If you do that, then the accuracy is like this for the singlet and the triplet states. This is a case of 4x4 lattice, this is a 6x6 lattice, and this is a data taken from the calculation by Fakir, I think it's 2 years ago, I don't remember. Anyway, the quantum Monte Carlo data can be taken because here, we don't have any frustration, this is just a Hubbard model without T prime term. So, in this case, this is a 4x4, so we can compare with the exact diagonalization result. And basically, it converges with the accuracy of 4 or 5 digits in both cases. And the interesting thing is that error bar by the quantum Monte Carlo, you can improve the quantum the error bar if you do the longer and longer run, of course. But in this best estimate, this is the order of the splitting of singlet and triplet. It turned out that to be the case.
Sorry, this is half filling or what filling?
And this is a half filling. Yes, it's rather simple. Okay. I'm just saying, starting from the simple case. And now the extrapolation seems to work very well.
So what is the number of basis states?
Yeah, here the maximum number of states is 140 here.
And how does the computational complexity compare in QMC?
Basically, the computation time scales, QMC scales as L to the cube. Volume to the cube. But in this case, I think volume to the fourth. Another comparison is a comparison with the variational Monte Carlo result by using the Gutwiller wave function, and the Gutwiller estimate is somewhere here for the singlet ground state. So the variational Monte Carlo has a 1%. Accuracy or error in this calculation.
Okay.
Now, let me mention a bit more about the frustrated system, which you cannot calculate from the quantum Monte Carlo. And again, to compare with the exactly diagonalizable result, I have taken the case of 4x4 lattice. And this shows dispersion of the singlet and triplet. And again, the dispersion at this momentum point appears to show basically good agreement to each other. So the Erast state appears to be obtained rather accurately. Now let me go on to the results. So these are the results obtained earlier, two or three years ago. And this is a case of frustrated square lattice system. And this is an isotropic triangular lattice which can correspond to the organic compound. And now what we see is in the plane of U and the frustration T prime, if U is large enough and frustration is small, of course we have antiferromagnetic insulating state. And if U is small enough, we have a paramagnetic metallic state. And in between, we see some strange phase. And that strange phase is insulating. So the metal insulator boundary is here. And in this region, it appeared to show absence of any kind of long-range order studied so far.
How do you detect symmetry breaking within this method? Or do you detect it at all?
I'm going to tell you how some orders are not present in the next slides, I guess. After that work, the method was more, the system was studied in more very detail. And here we have a study just on this line. And we speculated roughly this type of phase diagram. So what we have studied is along this dashed line. Now, we have studied this system in more great detail. And then by extending T prime to 0.9, and this is the slide here, now we have seen some other symmetry broken state, which is dimer state here, and also collinear state appeared for rather large U.
So which of these lattices is this?
This is this lattice. So
collinear, you mean pi zero antiferromagnetic?
Right, right. So basically, stripe type phase.
And is there an issue with dimer sticking?
Sorry?
I mean, a dimer is very translational invariance, right? So we should produce a sticking pattern.
Yeah, we have measured the dimer-dimer correlation functions, and I'm going to show you which type of order parameter I have taken. So. We have obtained this phase diagram. So the question is how we can get metal insulator boundary and magnetic boundary. First, I'm going to tell you how the metal insulator transition, metal insulator boundary is obtained. That is obtained by measuring charge gap. And the charge gap appeared to open as a function of U linearly. And the charge gap was measured by using grand canonical ensemble method, and I have not talked about that, but the grand canonical ensemble can be taken. And then as a function of chemical potential, there is a region of the chemical potential, the number of particles not changing. And in that region, we have a gap, and the lowest chemical potential, largest chemical potential for those region of particle not changing gives us the charge gap. And that charge gap is obtained like this. And as a function of system size, we extrapolate it to the thermodynamic limit. And that black line fit is the thermodynamic limit. And it's amazing that the gap appears to open rather linearly. This means the metal insulator phase boundary is something like this. as a function of U over T and as a function of chemical potential. This is a charge gap. So the charge gap opens linearly. That means we have the V-shape structure. And it's interesting because we have experimental data in lanthanum titanium oxide, which was done actually 96 or 7, 96, yeah, probably 6. And there, this is actually a three-dimensional system, so it's a bit different. But still, it seemed to show that the opening of the gap as a function of effective bandwidth appears to be linear. Anyway, in that way, the metal insulator boundary was obtained. How about the magnetic boundary? And we have calculated spin correlations like this. Equal time spin structure factor. And for example, in the case of this lattice at T prime 0.2, with increasing U, as you saw, the Bragg peak appeared to grow with increasing U. And if you take 0.5, it appears to show growth with increasing U. So after getting this peak value, then we take the extrapolation to the thermodynamic limit as a function of linear dimensions, inverse of the linear dimensions. And then if it stays at the finite value, then we say that this is in the magnetically long range order state. And in that case, this is pi-pi point, so it's a simple antiferromagnetic order. But between U3.4 and 3.5, it shows some sudden change, and actually this is seemed to be a first order phase transition to paramagnetic state. So in this way, we have obtained the magnetic boundary. And now, so that tells us that if you decrease U from the large side, you first have antiferromagnetic long-range order, but it melts at some point of U. And that tells us that because of charge fluctuation introduced by reducing U, the zero-point oscillation of the spins is enhanced, and it appeared to quantum mechanically melt at this point. And the important point is that melting point appears to be located at a larger U value than the metal insulator transition, and that is rather natural because the antiferromagnetic insulator is a subtle long-range order, and in two-dimensional or low-dimensional systems, it's rather fragile as compared to the MOT insulator itself. The MOT insulator is a rather local phenomena, and there's no symmetry breaking in either side. So the insulating charge solid is seems to be more robust than the spin solid.
So just remind you, the transition from the paramagnet to the non-magnetic insulator is second order or first order?
I think it depends on the, seems to be depend on the parameter region, but in this case, I think it's a first order type transition. So because it seems to show rather a sudden change of the magnetization at the transition point.
Is that the one you're asking about?
No, the bottom. The paramagnet to the non-magnetic insulator, right?
Bottom, here.
Yes.
This is first order transition. This is first order transition, but yeah. So this is rather consistent with the recent recent studies in the V2O3 or organic compound where the metal insulator transition by the bandwidth control shows first order transition at low temperature, and it has a finite temperature termination at the critical point, as I show in the previous slides. So this is a ground state calculation, so it shows first order transition. But it's interesting that if you increase the frustration, the jump of the double occupancy, which signals the first order transition, appears to decrease. That means if you increase the frustration, the first order transition becomes more continuous-like, but still there is a jump in all the parameter region we have studied.
But your gaps seem to open continuously.
Oh, yeah. That is a
first order nature.
No, because if the gap opens linearly, that means there's a level crossing in the ground state. And if you have a level crossing, and then the excitation to the metallic phase, solid phase, should open linearly. So this is simple.
So does that mean that if one looks at the single particle gap in the non-magnetic insulator, that would jump with the transition? You're defining a gap in a thermodynamic sense, but the potential.
Single particle gap.
If it's really a first order transition crossing the levels, it seems like the single particle excitations, lowest energy charge excitations in the insulator have nothing to do with the lowest energy charge excitations in the paramagnetic there. So you might expect a jump in the gap defined in that fashion.
Yeah, might be. We have not calculated a jump, but yeah, that's. That is different from the first excited states. I mean, charge gap.
I realize your definition of charge gap is not that. I was being confused by exactly this question.
But he's looking at the compressibility.
Essentially. I mean, it's non-linear. Thermodynamic.
Yeah, non-linear.
So the real issue is what is the nature of the non-magnetic insulating state. So we have calculated several candidates, Diamond order, Plunkett order, several kind of magnetic order and charge order, and density wave, like a S density wave or D density wave. The definition of the D density wave order parameter is like this. And the Diamond order parameter is defined like this, and we calculate the correlation function of these order parameters. And in the case of DDW, the size scaling appears to show like this, and of course you can say anything from the finite size calculation, but it appears to show vanishing order in the thermodynamic limit, irrespective of the amplitude of U. And actually, here the U7 is in the region of non-magnetic insulator. This case shows the Dymer correlation function defined by this, and again, irrespective of the U value, it appears to show a rather quick decrease of the Dymer-Dymer correlation function. So the next issue is to see the excitation spectrum, because we can calculate ERAS state and dispersion and the triplet excitation we can calculate. To see the excitation spectrum in the non-magnetic insulating state, let me just tell you about, just as a warming up exercise, in the case of antiferromagnetic ordered state. And here I'm showing the triplet S1, S2, S3, S4 excitation energies as a function of system size, 1 over linear dimensions. And this excitation energy appears to perfectly fit with the prediction from chiral perturbation theory based on the nonlinear sigma model. And we fit, we have a fit of these behaviors. And then what we obtain is that by using this form, the spin wave velocity appears to be 0.67 in this case of the U4. And stiffness is something like this. And by using that, if we can make some mapping to the Heisenberg type model, then the Heisenberg exchange coupling appears to be 0.42. And this is quite consistent with the previous calculation by Jorge Hirsch more than 10 years ago. He calculated the staggered magnetization as a function of, as a function of system size, and he specified the corresponding value of j, and that was 0.4 for this choice of the parameters. So it is it rather consistent. So the excitations. Here it's just exercise, so this is a non-frustrated system. So if you do the same thing in the frustrated system, here I'm showing the excitation spectrum as a function, again as a function of a system size, and again it appears to, let's see, it might be wrong. That's okay. Here I'm showing the plot as a function of 1 over n, because as you see in the previous, in the previous plot, the excitation gap is scaled in the leading order 1 over n. So I plotted that, and actually the coefficient shows the c square over rho. So the coefficient of this linear slope should tell us the inverse of the uniform susceptibility. So here I'm plotting as a function of 1 over n. And so this slope in the thermodynamic limit should be proportional to the inverse of the uniform susceptibility. And now this case plus is the case what I have shown, non-frustrated system. So we have a good spin wave excitations. But then if you introduce large frustrations, red one and blue one, it appears to show rather similar feature. But if you plot by using chiral perturbation theory, then what we obtain is spin wave velocity 1.5 and so on. And this means that the spin wave velocity seems to be larger than the original transfer of the Habermasian. It's rather unphysical, unreasonable. So of course you can fit it, but the result is a rather strange one, and I think this is related to the absence of the long-range order itself. And but still, it appears to suggest that the spin susceptibility remains finite because of gapless excitation. Now, more surprising result is the collapse of the dispersion. We can calculate the momentum dependence of the each sector of singlet and the triplet state for each Erath state. And then the bandwidth, which correspond to the spin wave dispersion in case of antiferromagnetically ordered state, here that dispersion in the singlet sector and the triplet sector appears to become smaller and smaller with increasing the system size, and it appears to practically vanish. That means we have very small spin excitation dispersion, and that also means some kind of orthogonality by spatial translation. And I'm not saying that this is exactly zero, but it must be very small. And that means that some kind of quantum incoherence, and if you would like to consider some spin-on-type excitation, that spin-on-type excitation appears to be surrounded by the sea of singlets, and that cloud of dressing appears to prohibit the emergence of coherence, although we have a translational symmetry.
So the previous result is supposed to say that the there's no gap in the spin sector,
mm-hmm.
And now you say that the dispersion is also very
small.
Very small.
Yeah.
So it means basically at every wave vector, the minimum energy spin excitation is too small to measure. Is that the?
Well, we have excited states, of course,
well,
also.
The minimum energy.
Yeah, minimum. Erath state. Yeah, yeah.
So that, throughout the drawing.
Right, line. Right. So this cartoon tells us the basic structure. basic structure, cartoon of the excitation spectrum is something like this. Here's a ground state with very small dispersion. And then we have a triplet state, S2 state, 3 state, 4 state. And those have a finite gap at finite size. But with increasing system size, this collapses to zero. That is also the case of anti-Fermionic ordered state. But the amazing thing is that the dispersion itself is very small. And that means if you start from the anti-Fermionic ordered state, the spin wave velocity becomes smaller and smaller. And eventually, the spin mass, spin excitation mass, appear to diverge at the transition point. And then it goes to some disordered state. It's reminiscent of the case of the metal insulator transition, where if you come from the metallic side to the insulating side, in some class of system, it can show the divergence of effective mass of electrons before coming to the real insulating state. And here it appears to show some kind of similarity, where the mass of spin excitation diverges, and because of that degeneracy, quantum fluctuation allows to make a melting of the original order. And actually, if if the dispersion is flatter than if alpha is larger than 2 in 2 dimension, we have a destruction of the long range order because of infrared divergence.
So do you, let me make sure I understand, so each value of momentum and each value of spin, you have to redo the sort of variational calculation, is that?
Right.
Yeah, so can we really trust, small difference, small differences in?
You can do in two ways. You can do it in two ways. One way is to do the same PRG calculation and then extracting excited states by imposing the quantum number projection. But also for low lying excited states that can be done. But for the higher energy state, the component for the high energy state is already missing in that calculation. So we have to do the similar calculation independently.
So what do you do in the first case where you? In the first, with the higher state, you have to redo it. Your calculation again. What did you say you did?
In the first case, we take. We apply this term repeatedly,
yeah.
But of course this is a variational, so some kind of excited states also contain even in the largest value of P.
Okay.
And then we take the quantum number projection and we can extract each sector of the lowest energy state. And that seems to be consistent with each other.
Is there some difference between the K for 5 pi and the other K vector?
Here we have some, we have some dispersion, of course. I'm saying that seem to be very small in the thermodynamic limit, but if you see the excitation dispersion here, then you have some dispersion. And I think this is rather similar to the anti-ferromagnetic excitation.
Because the gap, if you look the gap from the ground state in the S equals zero sector to the gap to the unfinite size system to the S equals one sector, which if there is nil order, the gap to the first equal S equal one sector, which is in 5 pi.
Yes, I think.
I think. Should have a dominant term in one over n. The other one should be dominant in one over square root of n.
If you have a anti-Fermionic order, you mean?
And after that, when you go to the transition and criticality, I expect, I don't know, that stiffness goes to zero.
I think the spin wave velocity is going to zero.
You say spin wave velocity, but it does, it is spin wave velocity and
That's a subtle question because we have to extrapolate before extrapolation, we have C and rho somehow, and stiffness and velocity.
But
and how it. Yeah, we'll discuss later. We can discuss.
So you suggest that there's sort of a massive constant utility identified.
Mm-hmm. Why?
You know, when I look at least at the lower picture.
Yeah, lower picture is just a cartoon. I'm just saying that there must be some.
Right?
Sorry?
You're claiming that you approach it closely.
Yeah.
So it has to be that it's just extremely sensitive to disorder spatial.
Must be. Yeah. Well, extremely sensitive to the disorder or some kind of lattice. Specific lattice distortions, that might be related to the signature of the kappa ET compound, which shows at very low temperatures splitting of the 1 over T1, and that indicates some very slow mode is appearing there.
Well, how confident are you in your results? No, I mean, it is obviously approximate, it's a question of whether, yes. I mean, you seem quite confident we should really believe this gaplessness across the whole Brillouin zone. It's a sector. It just seems very surprising.
Well, what I can tell you is the finite size result. And I'm not telling that we have the well-known way of extrapolation to the thermodynamic limit. But what I can tell you is that the dispersion is getting smaller and smaller. That is, I can say.
This is true everywhere inside this non-magnetic insulator.
Well, we have examined in the case of this type of a Hubbard model and triangular lattice system, those seem to show similar behavior. So, well, we have not examined every point, but probably you can see. No, you can see here. I have shown three different cases, and the way of collapse of the triplet gap appears to be rather similar.
But not the red cross.
Red cross here.
Yeah.
Red cross and black one here. This is small frustration, so the antiferment order is not destroyed yet.
But this is not momentum resolved.
This is not momentum resolved, just a triplet excitation.
I mean, it reminds me of something I saw a long time ago, say early 90s, when Oscar Zucca and Antonio Pharma, et cetera, were playing with these charge transfer models, right? They were basically looking for just transfer instability, this chain. And it got out something quite similar, and it was a signal phase separation. So when you sort of tune up interactions, you get into a regime where you get phase separation.
Phase separation to what?
Oh, I forgot. Different value, you have a chunk of stuff one, bulking in stuff two, and there are many ways of distributing these chunks, right? And it produces an effect of degeneracy.
I see. Uh-huh.
And they're also excited about it, but then turned out to be this phase separation thing, and it's of course not very interesting.
If it could happen in the charge sector, I'm sure that it means that there's phase separation, because dispersion becomes vanishing, and then it indicates phase separation, because the compressibility in that case should be diverging.
Right? But now you can think in a spin analogy, right? You get a stuff made out of spin, floating a stuff made out of spin, and also phase separation.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how to describe spin phase separation.
Diamond phase floating in the antiferment.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff. Right?
Mm-hmm. I don't exclude this possibility. And then let me summarize. So we have studied quantum spin like instead in two-dimensional Hubbard model, and that appears to show quantum melting of spins by charge fluctuations. and the spin excitation appear to be gapless. That means non-zero uniform susceptibility. And dispersion appears to be very small. That the interpretation is the spin wave velocity is vanishing and the spin excitation mass is diverging. And because of that, melting appeared. And this appeared to be a realization of a kind of genuine remote insulator without any kind of symmetry breaking. But of course, you can argue about this. And helium-3 and organic compound, of course, if there is some hidden order, I don't exclude that possibility. But with such a small dispersions, it must be rather peculiar states. There are many open issues. So one apparent question is the connection of this state to the a kind of long-range RVB, where, as in the case of Lee and Newton and Anderson, if you take some power law decay type singlet amplitude, and if the antiferromagnetic order is destroyed for some large power of decay, then it could have a degeneracy with the gapless excitation. And another question is the coherence of spinons, and I told that the dispersion appears to be very small, but it's a subtle question. So the problem is how the coherence of spinon is destroyed or realized, and because of that degeneracy, it should have a very strong instability to many type of perturbations like lattice distortion or impurities. And magnetization process has not been studied. And also, connection to the superconductivity is also an intriguing issue when doped, but it's not, it's a future issue. And so I'm done, but then the next person should be lucky if there's no questions.
The fact that you have this massive degeneracy doesn't mean that the metal by itself is very hard to find a ground state. That means you are still in a range where you cannot say too much about the ground state.
You mean the metal?
No, in your metal. I mean, if you have this massive degeneracy, then that would mean that your L should be enormous.
Yeah, so that means actually if you increase the system size, even our method will have some difficulties. So we are now speculating from finite state calculation where Eras state is well defined and we can get that. And then speculating how it appears to be going. And so actually if the system size becomes larger and larger because of that degeneracy. But if you take the quantum number projection, those are distinguished each other.
So you showed us that the energy scales quite nicely as the function of the number of states in the Hilbert space. Do other quantities scale nicely in the same way?
You mean the size scaling of the...
No, I mean as a function of the size of your Hilbert space.
That means the size of system size itself, right?
Yeah, okay. So I mean, but you only showed results for the energy, so I'm asking if other quantities scale.
But how can you compare? Because we have no reliable estimate for larger system size.
Just if you plot, you know,
the variance extrapolation.
It becomes linear as a function of variance. But it depends on the case. If you, I have shown the result up to U10, and if you go to much larger U value,
oops.
If you go to a much larger U, then the convergence becomes worse and worse. That's true. So in that sense, the real connection to the Heisenberg model is not seen yet. But still, we see dimer phase and collinear phase, strife phase, and antiferromagnetic phase. And it appears to have some connection to the speculation in the Heisenberg model. Yeah. OK.
I think we should thank Marcel.